Welcome to the Healing Grove Podcast. I'm Dr. Kristen Ryman, an integrative holistic family physician, author of Life After Lyme, and host in this virtual space of learning, healing, and growing. I believe humans are like trees, and our physical limb is only one of many. Health on all limbs of the tree, emotional, conceptual, social, spiritual, is absolutely required for the whole tree that is you to be vibrantly well. I created the Healing Grove Podcast as a place to showcase some of the world's best integrative and holistic medicine, to expose you to transformative tools and mindset shifts for all limbs of your tree. I hope you enjoy our conversation in the Healing Grove today as much as I enjoyed having it.
Hey, Irma, so good to see you here.
It's good to see you, Kristen.
So everyone, this is my new friend, Irma Jennings, and she is a bone health expert. She's a seasoned osteoporosis patient navigator with over 13 years of specialized experience in bone health. As a holistic bone coach, she provides comprehensive, evidence-based education on bone health, ensuring that clients are well-informed about osteoporosis management. She excels in facilitating connections between her clients and bone doctors, offering support and advocacy during medical consultations. And she expertly guides her clients to advanced DEXA facilities equipped with, importantly, trabecular bone score or TBS technology, which not all facilities have, and we'll get into that, I think, having their tests read by a certified densitometrist and ensuring accurate bone health assessments. Her collaboration with gut-focused functional medicine practitioners reflects her holistic approach, recognizing the interconnectedness of overall health and bone strength. And she's actually partnered with my good friend, Dr. Kristan Hines, in offering a course around elimination diets, gut health, and bone health, and the interplay between those three things. Her commitment to continuous learning and professional development is evident in her participation in leading osteoporosis programs, including a summit I recently watched on bone health, which was excellent. And she integrates her knowledge into her practice, enhancing the care that she provides to her clients. So I'd love to have you start by telling us what got you into this place where you're passionate about teaching people about bone health, Irma.
All right, I'm going to tell you the story. And it, when we have these stories that get us to a point where all of a sudden that's the inner core of our life or our work, the story becomes a little like, I wonder if that story is relative. But yes, it is. So I was in my 50s, gone through menopause, went to my gynecologist who said, surprisingly, and this is a very important point to highlight, why don't you have a DEXA test, a bone mineral density test? And I said, okay, what is it? Okay, I'll do it. I was rather compliant at that point. So I went for the test. And it came back that I was showing osteopenia. Now, this is another key point that we want to talk about. That was never supposed to be a diagnosis. It was an indication of low bone density, that you're losing bone. It's not like, oh my God, I have osteopenia. But my doctor said to me, you need to go on medication. You have to go on medication. If you don't, you will become a broken lady, old lady. And I thought, really? Really? Now, at that point, Fosamax was the drug, and it had been sort of a lifetime drug, or at least a 10-year drug. There was no talk about taking a bone holiday or a drug holiday. It would have been, take this drug and we'll see you. Who knows when? Who knows what he's going to check up as far as whether or not the drug is working or not working? I thought about this and I said, I'm not feeling that. So then I started to do a deep dive into the food aspect and the supplement aspect and exercise. What kind of exercise is right? And should I be in my marriage because it's causing me high stress? Should I continue to live in New York City because it was causing me high stress? My friends were saying, why don't you get out? I lived in New York for 37 years. I had a previous career on Wall Street. I was, and that was just damaging as far as bringing on stress, high levels of cortisol, inflammation, and a lack of self-care. So that's how it started with that diagnosis. And I thought, I'm not doing that. And that's the people that I attract today, those that don't want to be on medication. But it's not just simply a decision about, I don't want to be on medication. It's like, okay, understand that this is a road. It's a road. It's not a medication is pop a pill and hopefully you're good. But if you're on the road to understanding your bone health, it's a journey. It's a long journey. 2 years, 3 years, It depends. So.
Can I interrupt for 1 second? Because you said something at the very beginning of your story, Irma, that piqued my interest. You said that never should have been a diagnosis. Tell us more about what you mean by that.
It was a label that came out and all of a sudden was emphasized. And this is going to sound, there was an influx of getting DEXA machines and facilities. And this came around, I think in 1994, that suddenly doctors were getting machines, and they're quite expensive at this point, and getting everybody in there. And then all of a sudden people were having osteopenia. That dialogue or that terminology had been challenged by the real boneheads in the world and said, no, let's really change this up, because that is bringing a lot of fear and that's not what we want to do. So it was shifted to osteopenia as a precursor to osteoporosis, which is not, to low bone mass, low bone density.
Did you just say osteopenia is not a precursor to osteoporosis?
No.
Okay, hold on. Well, my head explodes. I've never heard anyone say that before.
I know. Everyone thinks that if you have osteopenia, you're going to absolutely have osteoporosis. Now, it's a wake up call. It's a wake up call that says, I'm losing bone. Now, one of the things about osteoporosis, people think, it's an elder issue. It's going to manifest, when I'm much older. This is a 65-year-old disease, but it's actually an adolescent hiccup, or not maintaining your bones when you're young, that manifests in later on in life as you age. But it's not necessarily that you're going to get osteoporosis if you have osteopenia. As I said, it's a wake-up call. So what does that mean? That means that let's take a look at really what's happening with your bones. I want to interject something because this gets me very excited. The goal, if we can get young women as they're going through menopause to go for a DEXA test to get a baseline, that would be ideal. So that means a conversation with your general practitioner, your functional doctor, or your gynecologist. Typically, they will say no, unless you say something to the effect of, my grandmother broke her hip, we have osteoporosis in the family, because there is a hereditary factor in osteoporosis. And you get that bone mineral density and you use it as a baseline. The conversation about DEXA, bone mineral density tests, it's a big one, because you want to hopefully go to the same facility. DEXA is the gold standard. It has been since 1992, I think it came, 92 or 94. But not all facilities have great DEXA tests, or technicians that are trained, or technicians that are certified densitometrists, which means that they know how to put you on the table. They know how to read the report. I can't tell you how many people, they get their reports. Well, let me go back into that for a second. They get the report, which is a 2-page report. It's like a Cliff Notes. And that's what's being sent to their doctors, to their general practitioners who are then prescribing, or the gynecologists who are then prescribing. But they can't read the tests because they don't have the full report. I had said to my endocrinologist, how come I can't get the full report? I go into Penn. And she said, it confuses people. I said, not me, not my people. I want the full report because I want a second opinion on things. And I want to be able to look at, there are so many aspects on the DEXA that if somebody who really knows bones and how to read the test, they can see, wait a minute, there was a compression fracture, or wait a minute, there might be some cancer here, or there's something odd going on here. Versus when you get a 2-page report that says L1 through 4 is negative, whatever the number is, let's say it's negative 1.9, which is osteopenia, or it's in excess of negative 2.5. It's very confusing because as the low numbers go up, that's when it's osteoporosis. But looking at those numbers with that 2-page report, it's just not enough. And so you have to hose me down because I get very excited about this stuff. Do you want to say something?
I just wanted to say, I mean, it's already, so everything you've said jives with what I remember from being trained in terms of what to look for. But I'm also, there's so much expertise that goes into just what you just said. And I'm hoping we're going to get to a place where you let people know how they can find a bone health coach. Cause I know a lot of people are going to be like, okay, this is just too much information to manage. Who can walk me through this? And I know you're that person. And I want to know like what that looks like for people and how they, how they might benefit from working with someone who can like advocate for them and come from a place of, I get how to read a report. I get how to tell you how to get positioned on a table, how to look for the right kind of person.
I've done a lot of writing about that, a lot of blog posts. I have positioning on how to get a proper DEXA on my website, that people should be on their back when they're doing the spine. The legs should be elevated so the spine is flat, because you want to see if you have scoliosis. That might impact the bone mineral the test. When you're doing hips, you want them to be rotated 15 degrees. They should be strapped down so that they're actually, you could see, the radiologist or the test can see inside the bone to see if there's any loss there. And oftentimes the wrist is an important piece to be included in the DEXA test. Now, not everybody does that. People will go in, they'll get their DEXA test, they'll just be on the table. They didn't do any of that stuff. So then it's a question, well, is it a good test? So the doctor's looking at a two-page report, doesn't know it's a good test. So yes, right. It's a little confusing. So what I do is I send the tests out to, I have a couple of people that I refer to who are densitometrists. One is Lonnie Simpson, the other one is Keith McCormick. And they know how to read the tests. I also find doctors, bone doctors, who are certified densitometrists. But when I go with my clients, with the tests, and I make sure that they get the full report, which is a full-time job, I'm sorry to say, Kristen, it's challenging, that I will make sure that the doctor has the report, looks at it thoroughly, and knows what he's looking at, he or she, because it's not, it takes time. It takes time to really look at that.
Does that tend to change? Yeah, my first question actually is not even that. My question is, how do doctors handle you coming in and like telling them how to do their job better? Because there's a lot of fragile egos in medicine. You know, this is my tribe. I see it all the time. Like, how does that go over?
I know. So I leave my Wall Street, New York attitude outside the door, and I'm advocating for a client, and I always make sure that my client is prepared. So I said, okay, here's what we're going to talk about. You're not going to show them anything from Dr. Google. You're not going to bring in a book that I often refer to, which is Great Bones, Taking Control of Your Osteoporosis, which is a great book by Keith McCormick. You're not going to bring that book in and say, here, doctor, I bought this book for you. You're not going to do any of that stuff. We're going to figure out really what we want to know. We want to know, how are your bones, and how is he or she discerning the quality and the density of your bones, and what is the next step that we can both hear it? And are they doing, should I go deeper? Okay. And are they doing bone turnover markers, which are indicating whether or not you're currently losing bone or not? Many doctors don't believe in those tests, believe it or not, because again, it's like the 24-hour urine test. They feel that people are not compliant. And I say to them, so I used to run a doctor's office in New York City, and I know how difficult it is for people to get tests. They say they're going to do it, and then life gets in the way. It's not necessarily their fault, but I'm the one that calls them up and say, okay, so here's how you're going to do that 24-hour urine test. We're going to take a jug. I mean, it's that big orange thing that you put the urine in. But if you're out during the day because you have a job and you're uncomfortable with that, you make sure your glass, you have a ball glass jar that's sterilized and or cleaned. I don't know if it has to be sterilized. I do. And then you, when you urinate, you put it into that jar, and then you put it into a vat, like a cooler. And I'm sorry, it's an inconvenience, but you're getting a test. So you want to make sure that it's done right. So there's that. And when they have the bone turnover marker, which is the C-telepeptide or the CTX, they have to know that they need to have it done first thing in the morning. 7:30 is ideal. And they want to make sure that they're off of collagen and biotin. I go off of all of my supplements before I take those tests, because for 48 hours, because I want a clean test. So I hold their hands, and I just want to make sure that they have all the information. So I'm an advocate. I know how hard these doctors work. I know how little time they have. I know it's precious, and I want to get to the point. I don't want to get there fast. I tell my people, don't bring your stories. They don't want to hear about your kids. Like, we want to get down to it. So I do that. And if they go off track, I bring them back in a gentle way, in a loving way, because it's important. Such a delicate topic. People are so afraid. And I don't want that to happen.
I'm glad you brought up that word afraid. I keep thinking about what bones are and the different kind of stories we have about our bones and just how important it is to have the structural support and rely. I feel like you can rely on your scaffold, you know, or on your skeleton. And then I'm recalling that Chinese medicine, you know, they talk about the bones are the domain of the kidneys, which is all about fear.
Yes. And oftentimes kidneys are impacted by bones in one way or another, certainly with some of the medications. But understanding that connection between the kidneys and the bones is a very important piece. A lot of my clients will have kidney stones because, and I'm not going to get into oxalates right now, but they're eating a high oxalate diet and their system is not able to get rid of the oxalates. So a lot of them have kidney stones. Not, I would say that probably 20% of them, but it's all these little indicators are that something's a little off and let's work to get it back to homeostasis center. And I think that that's what's so wonderful about the whole Chinese medicine and even Ayurvedic. It's the, you know, as we get older and we get drier and we get, you know, kyphotic, and it's like, no, we could stand strong. We could figure this out. And I find that women in particular love being in community because they can talk about this stuff. And, oh my God, I didn't know. Hormones is a big, big conversation in my community. And I started off by saying, okay, so do you want to talk about vaginal dryness? They're like, no, I don't talk about that. I said, okay, then I'll start. I had vaginal dryness, you know, and it's just opening up the door to a conversation that's comforting to let go or alleviate some of the fear. Like, we're in this together. I mean, that's a statement that was overused during COVID, but truly, we are in this together. I mean, women are such a dynamic force. We have to hold up so much, so our scaffolding has to be strong.
Yeah, I love that. I really believe life is a team sport. Like, yeah. we're not supposed to do it alone. You know, we're not supposed to do it alone. I'd love to hear more. You said hormones, and hormones are a topic that we're going to discuss in the podcast coming up shortly. But I'd love to hear what your important messages are for people, women in particular, but men as well, maybe, about bone health as it relates to menopause, postmenopause, and, you know, hormones, bioidentical or otherwise.
So I will tell you what I know. I'm not a doctor. I could tell you from my personal experience and also from the experience within my community. Hormones are very tender and precise tool. And having a doctor that really understands the mechanism of hormones is important. I outsource. I find people that can prescribe, people that are beyond the Women's Health Initiative, they actually understand that bioidentical hormones can have an impact. There's so much conversation about as we get older, we don't have the receptors to take in the estrogen. I'm 74. I've been on bioidentical hormones off and on. I think I started in 2016. Different delivery methods. What I'm on right now, which is the patch, and so it's a 0.0375 estradiol patch, and we upped my progesterone up to 200 milligrams of the capsule. Now, even within that, Kristen, I mean, I have clients that are sensitive to the peanut oil in the progesterone. So working with a doctor, a functional doctor that says, you have allergy sensitivities or nut sensitivities, we're going to go to a compounding pharmacy for the progesterone. So it's a key piece. Vaginal dryness, libido, whoo! I mean, boy, did that turn things around for me. And I just want to keep living, and I'm in a relationship with my partner. I want to be active. I mean, from a Chinese point of view, this whole sexual activity is a very, very important piece for overall health. I don't mean to go down that road, but it's key, and it's uncomfortable for women to talk about. So the first layer of the conversation is usually, let's just talk amongst ourselves, and let's sort of reduce the maybe the shame that can come around that. Because when low libido or vaginal dryness or brain fog or whatever, if that's showing up, a lot of women feel uncomfortable talking about it. So I just put myself out there and say, let's talk, let's open up the conversation.
I really appreciate that. Just giving people permission to kind of speak what's affecting them so deeply. What do you see in women who don't choose to go on hormones in terms of their bone health? Are there sort of common pathways, or is it really, there are so many factors that it's hard to say that, you know, women who do use bioidenticals or don't have different outcomes?
Because the bones are so complex that my people think that it's one thing that they could do. Well, that's the medicine. But when you're on the road, when you're on the path, is it you're eating calcium-rich food? Is it that you're in a loving relationship? Is it that you're understanding the supplements needed, which is the calcium, the vitamin D, vitamin K2, MK4, MK7, magnesium, what kind of magnesium, what kind of calcium? You know, once you get that down, I don't sell supplements. So again, I source out to others. I find functional doctors for people so that they can actually look at the blood work. Because I think one of the flaws is that you go to, let's say, Whole Foods, and the young girl with the pink hair that has the sale du jour, and like, this is the calcium you should be taking. It's like, okay, no. You want to make sure you're taking the right dosage, the right kind of calcium. So is it the supplements that I'm doing, or is it the weight bearing exercise that I'm doing that's really bone specific? And there's been a tremendous amount of studies out there as far as what kind of exercise is best for bone. Is it that I'm doing my balancing technique because I'm doing Tai Chi or Qigong, so I'm balancing more? Or is it that I have reduced my stress? Or is it, in fact, I have controlled my bone turnover markers through a number of different devices? And one particular product has had some success with that, which is Osteo Natural, is the name of the company. It's OsteoStim. And that's a product by Keith McCormick, who, I mean, that's a big conversation, which I do want to say something right now. Keith McCormick is an interesting gentleman because at 45, he had severe osteoporosis, -4.5. He had 12 fractures on
he
his.
Wasn't he a marathon runner too? He was like
marathon, Olympian, yeah. Triathlete. He was a trainer. I mean, he would train when he was doing the Olympic training, 10, 12 hours a day, 5, 6 days. So he had a lot of stress and strain on his body. And so it was surprising that he had osteoporosis because he was doing all the pounding. And if one was saying, well, if you're running, you can't have osteoporosis, which he did. So there were a number of factors for him to really understand, but it took a very long time for him to figure it out. But because he was fracturing his overall, he had 22 fractures over the course of his really seeking out an understanding of this, he had to go on medicine to get out of the hole, as he describes it. So it was a measured way. He took medicine for 2.5 years. He's no longer taking medicine. He's 69 years old. He's training for the Boston Marathon. He still has osteoporosis, -3.3. But he's not fracturing. And that's the name of the game, is that we don't want to fracture. Because once you start, especially in the spine, that could be problematic.
Well, my understanding, Irma, is that that's where the TBS comes in handy. So that the TBS is going to tell you about your actual bone strength, right? As opposed to just the density. Can you break that down a little bit for listeners?
Yeah, so the DEXA test looks at bone density. And one would think, okay, that's good enough. But the bone is deep and wide. It's got marrow, there's a lot going on in the bone. And the want to view the internal architectural design or the scaffolding of the inner part of the bone. And that's where the trabecular bone score comes into play. It's a software that's attached to the DEXA test. Now Medicare reimburses for it. That was a long fight. It's not in every facility. Usually the universities have it. There is a place called MediMaps, MediMaps.com, where you can actually search to see if you can, if your facility or someplace close by has a trabecular bone score. But you must call the facility and don't talk to the person that answers the phone. Speak to the radiologist and confirm that they have a trabecular bone score. That's an important piece. In fact, I went on a field trip with a client because she said 2 years ago she had her DEXA test done. And I said, so, and she had the TBS. I said, and then 2 years later, I said, okay, right. We have your DEXA. Where's the TBS? They said they didn't have it anymore. I said, what? Yeah, they don't have it anymore. So I took a trip with her and I spoke to the person in charge. And so I don't have those kinds of problems. Like, I'm not intimidated by people, but I'm nice about it. And I asked the person, I said, so I understand you don't have the TBS anymore. This is a very big facility. And they said, yeah, we decided we don't need it. I said, and we got a new DEXA machine. So I said, why do you think you don't need it? Well, we didn't think it was useful. I said, you're doing, listen to me, look in my eyes. You're doing all of your patients a disservice because they're getting diagnosed with only one piece of data and you're taking that option away. She's like, oh. So, you know, it takes those kinds of conversations because facilities are probably looking to cut costs. I don't know what the renewal of the TPS is. I don't know that part of it. But in the world of bones, the bone people love GE as far as the name of the DEXA test. There's Lunar, L-U-N-A-R, and GE. And GE often, not always, often has a TBS, but again, you always have to check.
So interesting. Yeah. I want to say thank you on behalf of people, future people who are visiting that center, for having those hard conversations and for kind of holding people accountable to doing the right thing for their patients. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So as you're speaking, just that story made me think about how much you're kind of like the Lorax for the bones. You know, you're the Lorax who speaks for the trees. I feel like you're sort of the bone whisperer / bone speaker, like not just an advocate for your patients, but advocate for bones. That's just sort of the images came to me. I wanted to share it.
I really do like that.
How do you feel about bones? Like, what do you, you know, I think a lot of people just think of like, oh yeah, I got bones. They're the hard thing you can feel through my skin, or, you know, they're the things that break if I tweak it the wrong way. But what, how would you, I want to hear kind of your metaphorical, poetic speaking of bones. Like, what do you, how would you describe bones being the bone whisperer that I think you are?
Well, I, now that you asked me that question, Kristen, that's a good question, because I always thought as the, a weeping willow tree, although the weeping willow tree does not have deep roots, but the trunk is strong, but yet the arms, the limbs, the branches are, you know, they're flowing. And that's what we want. We want the strength and we want the flexibility. I think about bones as being this miracle. I mean, there's so much going on in the bones. It's where the marrow is, where red blood cells are produced. It's mind-boggling to me. That we think that they're just a dead white tissue, and they're alive. They're alive, and we have to feed them and love them and nurture them. And I remember going to Thailand and studying with a tremendous teacher there for their version of osteoporosis. And they would bang on the bone. And this is not an uncommon thing within various practices, but to sort of wake up the bone and wake up the muscle and so it was a bamboo, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but I bought one and I do it. So I think that bones are, they're what it's all about. I mean, they take us to the, from our first step to the last. So we have to love our bones.
Yeah. I remember the moment in medical school when I first saw a diagram of a bone kind of in the Netter textbook or whatever anatomy textbook. And you can see that there's all this trabecular structure inside that are these little caverns that come and go, and there's fluid that flows through the whole thing. And there's blood vessels that go into those spaces and bathe the whole inside of the bone, bringing it oxygen, bringing it nutrients, taking away waste and lymphatics and nerves. I mean, it's got it all.
Well said. It's absolutely pretty well said. And the whole remodeling aspect, breaking down, building up, breaking down, building up. I mean, this is dynamite. I mean, this is amazing that it does that.
Yeah.
And we just have to make sure that it's doing it in the right capacity. If it's breaking down too much, then we're starting to get osteopenia, osteoporosis. So we want to make sure that that remodeling is in the proper measure, it's doing it correctly.
So to that point, then, I want to hear your thoughts on the recommendation that a lot of people who have a diagnosis, there's air quotes there for people just listening, of osteopenia or a diagnosis of osteoporosis get, which is from their doctor saying, yeah, no exercise, it's going to bend, cause you to bend or cause stress or strain on your bones. It seems to me the opposite of what you might want to do if you're trying to rebuild bone strength and density. What do you think about that?
I agree with that. I think it's really, really important, and I hope everybody hears this, that working with somebody that understands osteoporosis, working with somebody that understands bones, because people think I do yoga, and that's a good thing, and that is a good thing for balance. But when they're doing spinal twists, I have to be, I don't do spinal twists. And I used to do yoga a lot. I don't do that anymore, because I'll tell you more about my bones as we go on. But there's been a lot of studies out there, one in particular out of Australia with Belinda Beck. I don't know if you heard her on the program.
Yeah.
She's very dynamic, because she's going to change a lot of views on weight-bearing exercise. So getting women to actually use, I mean, build muscle by lifting weights in the right way, and that their back is flat and they're doing the right kind of squat. But it has to be followed. So there's Belinda Beck, who created, well, the one program that's coming around here that's being licensed is Onero, O-N-E-R-O. Where is it? O-N-E-R-A. Onero. Anyway, I think it's O-N-E-R-O. And it's now in a couple places in the US on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a program that is based on her study, her scientific study, that showed that this bone density was improved with weight-bearing exercise. So I absolutely think that we need to do it. Women think, oh, I go swimming, that's good. It's not good for bones. It's good for getting oxygen and flexibility, perhaps, but it's not good for bones. And then they say, but I walk 3 or 4 miles a day. It's like, it's okay. It's not the density, it's not the pounding that you need. It's good for, you know, your heart. And I do, they have a number of things that they do, but it's not specific enough. So there's also a couple of people online, Sherry Betts, Dr. Sherry Betts, who is a physical therapist who works in the osteoporosis space. I interviewed her on my YouTube. She's fabulous. She really knows what she's talking about. And she has some, you don't have to have a gym in your house. You could use what you have at home. So there's a lot of hinge exercise where you're lifting up heavy weight, but you're doing it properly with flat back, then you're hinging over. And she's excellent. So the thing about osteoporosis and exercise is that we need to do it often. We need to do it about 20 minutes as often as we can, weight bearing exercise. And some people think, oh, well, I'll just do it 2 hours, you know, a couple times a week in the gym, and it's not good enough. That's why it becomes a way of living and a way of existing. So if you're working with your balance, which is so key, because, and I say to my people all the time, the breath goes into the bottom of the feet. Feel the foot on the ground whenever you take a step and breathe into it. I mean, this is a precious moment. I mean, during COVID, we forgot how delicate and how important the breath is, right? How deep it is. And some people couldn't take a breath. And now we can. Everybody can take a breath. Feel the bottom of your feet with each step. That's a mindful way of living and being. But it's important to really think about it, not being overly paranoid, like, I got to think about it every day. I can't do this. I can't do that. But how do I empower myself? How do I get stronger? And so it's important. It's important to exercise.
I'd love to hear your daily regimen of exercise for bone health.
Well, so I have... I found a personal trainer on Facebook that he comes to my house. And I said, I'm only going to work out with you if you take a look at Sherry Betts, her video. And then I shared Belinda Beck's video with him. And he said, okay, I'm on it. So he is really on top of that as far as watching that with me, as far as my posture. And he's building up my weights over time. We're doing a plank. And I got away from plank. Plank is such a beautiful exercise and it's effortless. But
plank's
I have
good for your bones. Plank's good for your bones.
Well, it's good because you're putting weight. Now, so some women have issue. When you have osteoporosis, you have it everywhere. Although they only measure the spine, the hips, and some, and as I said, measuring the forearm is a different bone, and they look at that for possibility of parathyroid issues. But anyway, when you're putting that weight, I'm putting it on here. It's good for me because that's where I have bad osteoporosis in my wrists. And then I bought those things where you put them on the ground. And anyway, it makes it a lot easier for me. I do walk a lot. And I do a system called gyrotonic. I've been doing that for about 25 years. And it is a, it's a combination of Pilates and yoga, and where Pilates is more linear, as I understand it from my own personal experience, and gyrotonics is more spiral. And that resonates with me from the bone whisperer point of view. But because recently I found out, and I don't want to shift the conversation if you want to just still focus on the exercise. So let me stay with that. I do a lot of walking. I do the weight training. And then I do another thing called functional patterns, which is it's really how you're holding yourself in life through space, and how one hip is with me habitually leading the way and skewing my body. So that's my routine.
Thank you for sharing it. Now let's circle back. What were you going to tell us about the...
So here's the thing. I felt like, wow, I'm a superstar because my osteoporosis, or my DEXA, was showing that I had bones of a teenager. It kept getting better and better and better. I was like, yahoo, doing all the right things. This is so good. And then I was developing, as most of us do, osteoarthritis. And osteoarthritis makes the bones look more dense on a DEXA test. Now, my TBS was showing that I had good inner working, inner core, inner bone. But I was looking at my DEXA. And then I had a conversation with Dr. Zambito about the Echolight. And the Echolight looks through osteoarthritis. It can work around scoliosis a little bit more efficiently and effectively. And so I said, I'm going to do that. And I did it 2 years ago, and I did it again. And it shows that I have osteoporosis in L3 and L4. And I was like, what? Then I felt like everybody that shows up in my tribe that says, I can't believe I've done everything. I do everything right, everything. But I don't know what it is. So now that I have that discovery, I'm just going to take deeper, look at deeper tests, look at my gut health, look at making, I'm tracking my CTX and my P1NP, the bones that are building, the bones that are breaking down. I'm tracking those things. I track my blood work. I'm a tracker. And I help my people track because I set up tracking tools for them, basically spreadsheets. It's nothing more than that. But this gives them agency and authority of like, okay, wait a minute, my liver enzymes are up. What's up with that? Oh, wait a minute, my calcium is spiking up. What's up? Could it be my parathyroid? And it's like, okay, let's go to door number two and let's make sure. So now I look at gyrotonics a little differently because I don't want to bend. I don't want to do that cat-cow thing because that's where the delicate part of the front part of the spine, that's where we fracture. So I had a very long conversation with my trainer right before I came here. And she's like, but Irma, we got to, no, that can't be. Because I said, I don't want to do it. I just don't want to do that. So we're going to figure it out. And now we have a workaround. So it's my body, my bones.
Wow. So that, can we go back to that moment when you got your report and you were like, wow, I actually have osteoporosis?
Yeah. Yeah, it was... I just look at it as a gift that I really, really deeply understand when people say, I've done everything. And how could this be? That was that moment where we came together and said, honey, I know. I know what you're talking about now. Really know. And let's put the fear aside and let's see what we need to do. Let's go for a deep dive.
Yeah. That's a powerful moment. So Echolight's sort of the new kid on the block. Talk a little bit about what that is, where that comes from. Can it replace DEXA scans, or is it the kind of thing where you want both still? Or what's your thought about that?
Well, so it's not covered by insurance. It's out of Italy. How many years? I don't know how many years it's been around. It's controversial from the DEXA people. I had a conversation. So Keith McCormick is a DEXA man. I mean, he knows how to read DEXA. And I thought, well, I know, I'll have a conversation with him and two of the orthopedic surgeons that are doing Echolight. The orthopedic surgeons that are doing Echolight, they get into the bones because of whatever reason, a new hip or something is broken. They get in there and they say, uh-oh, these bones are not what they appear to be on a DEXA. Now, oftentimes they don't have a DEXA before they do surgery. This is mind-boggling to me. To me, if you're going to have any kind of surgery, especially in the spine or hips, that you would say, I want to make sure that my doctor is on the same page as you. And you know, should I be doing something before? Like if I have tremendous loss, should I be taking an anabolic to build up bone as we go into the procedure? Let's just have a bigger conversation around that versus a siloed kind of thing. So bring me back to where I was, because you see, I go off tangent. Oh, echolot. So I had a conversation with Keith McCormick and Andrew Bush from South Carolina, Kim Zambito. Dr. Bush and Dr. Zambito are both surgeons. And I wanted them to talk bones. So I just stood back and let them talk. And gosh, was it exciting. And so I heard Keith say, okay, all right, I'm seeing that. It's not as good as. And when we hung up the phone, I said, what do you think? He said, get them both. So that's what I do. And it's like when you have any kind of standard blood work done and there's something a little askew, do you go for a functional test? I do. You know, I want to know what's really going on. So I look at that as sort of another piece of data. And there's so much that we need to have. I don't want to say so much. I mean, it's a path, as I said, it's a journey. But we do need to understand our blood work. We do need to understand that someone can look at the blood work through the lens of osteoporosis. Again, I'm not a doctor, so I could only speak in layman's terms that the whole red blood cell and how fat can build up. And we want the osteoblast. This is the way I understand it. We want the osteoblastic, that's the bone building cell. Remember, osteoblast B building, osteoclast C clearing, just from a simple terminology. We want the osteoblast to be strong and not to be weak. And as we get older, we have fewer mesenchymal cells that help with the osteoblastic transaction. We want to make sure that the right cells, that the cells, so that from the mesenchymal cell that, tell me if you know differently about this because you're a doctor, that it can, as we get older, we have fewer mesenchymal cells, and that the mesenchymal cell at one point as we get older can either go to a fat cell or an osteoblastic cell. And we want to help that direction. So we want to make sure that we're not sort of a thin kind of BMI of 16 or 17, that we're skinny fat, that our bones are becoming more fat versus osteoblastic. So we want to be able to look, find a doctor that can look at that and say, wait a minute, I'm seeing a little flag here. Let's go further on this examination versus your blood work all looks good. It's all within the normal range, right? So that's an important piece.
Wow. I'd never heard that about the sort of decision tree for the mesenchymal cell. Are there things that flip?
How do you say it?
I don't say that word actually, but I learned it in med school as mesenchymal, but I would trust you actually, because you are the bone whisperer and you're down and dirty with those little mesenchymal, mesenchymal buddies all the time. So I guess my question for you is, are there some common, you know, foods, experiences, environmental insults that could trigger, you know, the pathway to go towards fat versus osteoblastic cell?
That I refer to Keith McCormick, because he'll take a deep dive on that and say, okay, let's really look at your diet. I look at people's diets, but again, I'm a health coach. So I look at it from the food point of view. I love to eat. I mean, my whole life is around, what am I going to have for breakfast? And then lunch. And then, oh my gosh, dinner is coming up. Oh, I'm so excited. So I'm always thinking about the protein that I'm getting, because this is a very important key point when it comes to bones. This is getting off track a little bit, but we need the protein. And I don't know how much protein you recommend for your people, but in the bone world, we need about our body weight in protein. Now, I had this conversation with Dr.
Grams Hall. Of protein, grams of protein.
Yes, yes, yes. So
not pounds of protein. You're not supposed to eat.
Grams. Yes, thank you. Thank you. So I'm 135 pounds and I don't eat 135 grams of protein, but I get up to 80 or 90, and that's, you know, I feel that I'm getting there, but that is an effort. Excuse me, it's an emphasis. It's not an effort, it's an emphasis. So when I had this conversation with Dr. Hines, and she's, as you know, vegetarian, she takes in as much weight as many grams as she is her weight. So she takes in 120 grams of protein through various forms. She's a plant eater, so it's doable, but it's thought-provoking. So my ideal breakfast is a hamburger, grass-fed, 100% grass-fed hamburger, and then I can actually go for many hours on energy. If I have oatmeal, 10 o'clock, I'm looking around for the next food, next something. So that doesn't work for me. But we're all different. All different. Some people love oatmeal and it carries them through the day. Some people can't do it. So protein is a very, very important piece of the puzzle. What kind of protein are you eating? A high quality protein. And as far as vegetables and things of that nature, it gets a little sticky there because if I tell you everyone, that could be a little exaggeration, but mostly everyone says to me, I eat really well. I say, okay, tell me what you eat. And then they tell me what they eat. I was like, oh, not really well. Every day for lunch, I have a spinach salad. I was like, oh, that's not good because you're not getting any of the calcium from your spinach salad. So let's just rotate and try to think about that we have this big portfolio of food that we get to choose from and the rainbow on our plate. And instead of spinach, kale is a better choice. Collards are packed with calcium and they have quite a profile. Also, when it comes to leafy greens, arugula is a better choice and romaine is a good choice. I mean, sometimes when we look at those cute little boxes that are all ready to go and they have like baby spinach in there and baby this and baby that, baby Swiss chard, not a great choice. Not a great choice. A better choice would be.
Back up and educate me about the dangers of spinach. I don't think I know what those are. Tell me why spinach is not a good choice as compared to kale.
Spinach is one of the highest vegetables that have oxalates.
Okay, for the oxalates.
Oxalates, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're
Let's
big.
talk about oxalates. Let's do a little let's hear the download on oxalates.
I hesitate because there have been many, many studies out about oxalates going back to the 30s. And there is a group of people, in particular, a gentleman from the University of Wyoming, whose name is Michael Liebman, who works with the Vulvodynia Society or Foundation. The Vulvodynia Foundation are women who have problems, oxalate overloads, and it's manifesting in very painful. I don't know enough about it, and maybe you do, Kristen, but it manifests in painful vaginal activity. There is also a deep study in the world of autism and oxalates with children in particular. And there's now new science or new evidence coming out as far as it getting into the muscle and into the bones, oxalates. Now, if you can't get rid of them, then they deposit. So if they deposit, so I will tell you, last night I had spinach for the first time because I'm in New York. And I went out with a friend. I had spinach and I had some shrimp. So I had the protein, I had the vegetable. I got home, I couldn't urinate. So I have UTI, I have an interstitial cystitis. And oftentimes that is aggravated with oxalates. So I had coffee that was high in oxalate. I had chocolate, which is great for magnesium, but high in oxalates. And I had spinach. And I thought, girl, you got to do better than this. So that was my episode last night, and it resolved itself. And but when symptoms are showing up, sometimes they're arthritis, sometimes they're a reoccurring UTI. Sometimes we don't, unless you go to somebody who really understands some of this. I'm giving you a broad brush.
Well, and kidney stones too. I mean, kidney stones are often composed of oxalate or oxalic, acid that binds as a salt with something else like calcium. Tell us about what happens in terms of the bone story though with oxalates.
Well, I can't tell you that. I can't tell you that because that is in that conversation. Let me stop. Let me pause for a second. About 15 years ago, I visited Lauren Fishman, who wrote a Yoga and Osteoporosis book. And we were talking about a number of things. And I said to him, a lot of people have leaky gut. He said, what? What are you talking about? I said, yeah, leaky gut. He says, what were you talking about? Like the gut opens up, the food gets in there, and you would die. I said, well, that's not exactly how the mechanism works, but yeah, leaky gut. Now, everybody's talking about leaky gut today. So some form or another, or you know, whatever is going on in the gut. So I think that the whole aspect about bones, it will more and more information will come out. But what I can say is that there, I believe that there's an organic acid test that you could see if you have, if you're throwing off oxalates or if you're high in oxalate. I haven't done that test myself. I don't have enough information that says if you eat this, you will get that, because that's not exactly there, but it's in a bigger conversation, Kristen. So I say to my people, just keep it safe. Don't overthink it. Just rotate your food. Don't have 25 almonds a day. You know, soy, there's certain kinds of soy that is low in oxalates, believe it or not. But people are looking for milk substitutes and they're typically going for
almond milk.
Almond milk. And then they'll make almond bread or they'll make, you know, almonds have become
gluten-free baking baker's friend. Yeah.
Right.
Well, so what I'm hearing is there's this whole realm of like symptomatic from oxalates picture, you know, people who might have chronic UTIs or interstitial cystitis or, you know, joint pains, almost like gout, like almost you get little crystals for gout. It's similar. You can get little oxalate crystals in places, vulvodynia, which is nobody wants that. Incredibly painful. But then I think there's also a theoretical risk, and maybe it's borne out in the literature, I haven't looked, about oxalates in the diet, binding calcium in the diet so that that calcium doesn't get into your blood and it doesn't end up in your bones. Is that, am I right about that as well?
That's, thank you. That's exactly where we need to go with that understanding.
Yeah. So people might want to lower their oxalate intake, and you can Google low oxalate foods, right? Or high oxalate foods and then avoid those or limit those.
I have to say, I made a chart. It took us about 3 months to put this chart together. It was an oxalate and food chart. And I color coordinated it to make it really easy that, okay, here are better choices. These are the worst offenders. These are better choices. So there is that. There's that piece. Also, there's a woman out there, Sally Norton. Some people follow her religiously because these are people that have had symptoms, other symptoms, and their symptoms went away when they reduced their oxalate load. According to Dr. Liebman from University of Wyoming, it's 50 to 150 milligrams per day of oxalates is the low oxalate range. So, you know, when you're thinking about measuring that, that's why I made that chart, because it's like, you could see it at a glance. It's like, okay, all right, I'm going to be kind to my bones and my muscles and my joints and my bladder.
I love it. And be kind to beets by not eating them so often.
Beets.
You know, beets want to live. Maybe.
A tough one. Beets are a hard one because, first of all, it took the world so long to get used to beets. And then we started eating beets and they're like, okay. And then people were making cakes out of beets. I mean, it's beet greens.
Yeah.
Sweet potatoes.
So when you make your beet and arugula salad, just heavy on the arugula and light on the beets.
And
shave a few beets in there.
Yeah. And have some cheese, and the feta cheese.
Yeah. So is that beautifully color coded, tool somewhere on your website, or is that something that people have to be a coaching practice to receive, or your membership? Like, how do people learn more?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It is a part of my membership because it just took months and months to do the research.
Yeah. So tell us about your membership. Let's hear it. If people wanted to work with you and they wanted to be part of that, what's the next step people could take?
Well, so my membership starts with a package of coaching. So I talk to them, get to know their goal, with their density, once what their bone mineral density test is, getting copies, helping them get copies. That's a lot of work for so many people. It shouldn't be. But they get a CD, then they can't download the CD, and some doctors can't read a CD, and then you have to take the CD to like Staples to get it read. But they need to do this. So I help them manage all that. And then I find doctors for them. So I'm in a group of about 125 doctors that meet. These are osteoporosis emphasis doctors, so endocrinologists and rheumatologists and surgeons, 125 or so. That's led by Mike Lewicki from New Mexico, and he has a clinic. So I hear I'm there to listen to who could possibly serve my clients. Mm-hmm. So then I'll take someone on the side and say, are you taking clients and what's going on? So it's all about finding a doctor, but it's not just any endocrinologist, because I don't want the doctor that says, here's your DEXA, here's your script, here's your DEXA, here's your script. You know, I want somebody to say, let's go deep. And how do you do bone markers? And how often do you do them? And, you know, what is your, if you're medication driven, what is your medication du jour? And, you know, what is your opinion on bisphosphonates, which is one category of drugs that stop the breaking down of bones, and the anabolic is the one that builds up. But, you know, it's a big conversation, and before we even get there. So I, within my group, within the coaching, we talk about their food. We talk about, I'll gear them towards supplements. As I said, I don't sell them, but I say these are the great, the better calcium supplements to take. You don't want to take calcium carbonate as you get older, because chances are you don't have enough stomach acid to digest it. So calcium citrate is better. Just as one example, people don't like to take those horse pills, but now NOW makes a powder, calcium citrate powder, that they can put right in their water. I also suggest to people that they take Gerald Steiner, which is a mineral water that has high amount of calcium, if they can drink bubbly water and magnesium. It's just a nice way of getting their calcium that they need. So we talk about food, we talk about doctors, we talk about exercise, and then they come into my Bones Tribe as a member, and then we meet every twice a month. I have guest presenters in there. I had a functional dentist last time. I had a pelvic floor specialist that talks about the whole relationship between osteoporosis and giggling when you're peeing, and kyphosis, and that, like, kyphosis with the bladder and how that relationship happens. So that's how they do it. But one thing that I will say, may I say something about what I'm doing right now? It's okay.
Please.
So I have joined forces with Dr. McCormick, Keith McCormick, and we're teaching together. And so we have a 9-week course that we just opened up. Also, Kim, Dr. Zambita will be in there and talking about the Echolite. So Keith will talk about the supplements, what kind of supplements, why they need it. He'll talk about bone markers, and he will talk about osteoporosis medicine. So one of the things that I hear from a lot of doctors is that their patients don't know the vocabulary. So translating some of the terminology, osteocalcin, osteoblast, osteoclast, those are the basic things. But when they start getting into the weeds and the patient wants to know, you know, the terminology is important to understand. So you're empowered. And then I could say, okay, all right, I can make an informed decision based on the knowledge that I have. That was one of the reasons why I wanted to create a basic class. So it talks about the DEXA, the FRAC score, which is part of the DEXA test, the trabecular bone score. We talk about the Echolite. We talk about food, and we talk about the supplements. So it's a comprehensive class. There's going to be an Ask Me Anything with Keith McCormick at the last day, because, well, people love that.
Oh, it sounds awesome. It sounds awesome. You got to let me know when that launches so I can add it to the show notes here.
Okay. Yeah. It's actually live now. So I'll give you the link for that later.
Cool. Congratulations. That sounds fabulous.
Yeah.
So thank you. Is there anything we haven't talked about in the realm of, you know, what everyone should know about bone health that we'd like to highlight before we close?
Yeah. I would like to tell everyone to get a DEXA by the time they're 50. That's a goal. And if they can't, find out why they can't. It's a very important test to take. It's still the gold standard. And then when you're getting a DEXA, so Medicare reimburses, because Medicare set up the guidelines, they reimburse every 2 years. And if you can't get a DEXA test done because your doctor won't give you a script, I say, doctor, I'm going into menopause. My estrogen is going to get hit. that's where my bones are hit. We build bones up until we're about 30 years old, and then it's a slow decline. We lose between a half to 1% of bones a year. So we want to partner with a doctor that says, okay, we're going to do this preventatively, right? Let's get that DEXA test done. The other thing is I would say, please eat protein. Please eat at least 60 grams of protein a day, of course, depending on your body weight. And please drink water. We are so dehydrated and that impacts bone health. And also work with somebody that really knows supplements as far as what kind of calcium, what kind of magnesium is best for you. Some people get constipated with calcium, making sure your bowels are running properly, and work with a functional doctor because they know the ins and outs so well. And they talk to you from not a siloed position, but a whole body position. And that's what it's all about. Because we don't know until we know, and sometimes we'll never know, what is the main cause of our osteoporosis. And we just don't want things to be skimmed over. We want to make sure that it's not a parathyroid issue that's coming. A lot of people have that. Or the thyroid is working properly. So I would say, just at a glance, get your DEXA before you're 50. Get your DEXA every 2 years. Make sure you're taking your proper supplements, protein and water and exercise and sleep
I love it.
And bowel movements.
All the pillars. So once again, all the pillars matter to our bones as well as the rest of us. This has been such a rich conversation. I feel like you've just been sort of doling out pearls of wisdom the whole time. So thank you. Thank you for bringing such great information. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure, real pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Healing Grove podcast. If you liked it, please be sure to like and subscribe. And if you want to deepen your experience further, consider grabbing a copy of the Healing Grove playbook. With journal prompts for this podcast and 41 others, it's the perfect place to record your learnings, keep track of the tools you explore, and reflect on your own experience. Finally, it's important to mention that even though I am a doctor, nothing you hear on this podcast, whether from myself or my guests, constitutes medical advice. Any intervention you try should always be discussed with and supervised by a trusted member of your own healing team. Thanks for listening, and see you next time in the Healing Grove.